بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. There's been a recurring theme a number of conversations I've had in the last week or so around this issue of offense and of taking offense and of giving offense. There's this theme in our sort of current discourse, particularly in the woke way of looking at things, which suggests that it's perfectly legitimate for one to take offense. And there's an expectation for the other to behave in such a way as to not give offense. And that irrespective of what the other person's intentions were, you have the right to take offense to whatever they've said or done. So you might interpret the person's behavior as sexist or racist or chauvinist or prejudiced or in some way not right or not cool, and therefore you have the legitimate right to be offended. It also occurs to us that when this happens, when I have been offended, that the offending party is the only one who's to blame. The one who gave me the injury is the only one who is to blame. They should have known better. How could they have been so insensitive? I think it is useful to remember that in any injury, I mean, apart from a physical injury, a physical assault, any injury to one's sense of to one's dignity or one's sense of pride or correctness does require two. I mean, any offense requires two. If you say something deeply offending to me and I choose not to take offense, then there's been no offense. It requires me to take offense for the offense to happen, which suggests that in any offense, any indignity that gets done, there really are two partners to that event. There's the person who misbehaved and the person who chose to be injured by the misbehavior. Without those two, you don't have misbehavior. It really does require two for an offense to happen. There has to be an offense given and an offense taken. And without both, you have no offense. This understanding one can also sort of broaden to anything that relates to expectations. So one of the people that I had an interaction with this week was a mother who was deeply hurt by the misbehavior of her children, who are now young adults and who seem to be drifting away from the deen. And their behavior was causing her great distress. And what's interesting, obviously, in a case like this is that it does seem to be perfectly legitimate for one to be distressed, for a parent to be distressed when they see their children behaving in ways which might seem to be incorrect or immoral. But even in a case like that, there is the parent's expectation of the good behavior, and then there's the child's behavior. And it requires both for the injury, for the hurt in the parent to arise. Now, one may say, but isn't it perfectly legitimate for a parent to want the best for their children and to be concerned when their children are going astray and are possibly behaving in ways that could harm them in both this world and in the hereafter? But I do think that in cases like this, it's very important to understand that more precious on the in the universe, the more precious thing is not your child's good behavior, but it's your child's autonomy. The most precious thing that Allah has created in the universe is the autonomy of the individual human being. It is only an autonomous will that can be worshipful, as we've spoken before, as we've indicated before. So it is, one can't say my role is to turn you into an autonomous adult, and then when you use that autonomy in ways that don't meet my criteria, that I therefore get injured by it. I mean, by the very fact that your autonomy has been enabled means that your ability to misbehave in terms of my expectations is necessarily created. So if we say that the most precious thing in the universe is the adult human being's autonomy, and the person acts consistently with their autonomy, then that is their accountability. Every burden of a every bearer of a burden will bear their own burden. So we have license, in other words, to get a thicker skin with regard to the degree to which our children don't act to our own expectations. That there is, in a sense, a need to let go of our children, to allow them to set sail in the direction that Allah has pointed them in. And it does occur to me very often that if we allow our children to go in their own direction, and we allow that fully, then if we assume that what they experienced in their childhood was wholesome and of fitrah, then they'll come back to the deen. You don't need to worry about it. It's just a question of time. Don't make their problem your problem. If you've done the best that you can, let it go. You don't have to be hurt. There's an element of choice in being hurt by the degree to which your children do not rise to your expectations. You don't have to be hurt by the fact that your children do not rise to your expectations. There's the behavior of the child, and then there's your requirement. And in a sense, if you'd suffer hurt because of somebody else's behavior, just like if you suffer hurt when somebody behaves in an offensive way, in a sense, you are more culpable of the injury and more culpable with regard to the injury than the person who misbehaved. Because I have absolutely no control. I've got no volition with regard to how you behave. So in that sense, your misbehavior is your accountability. I have all control. I have absolute volition with regard to my expectations and my conditional motive, which means that if I suffer because you aren't acting consistently with my expectations, and my expectations are something that I have a choice over, then surely I am more culpable to my experience of hurt than you are, because I have brought my expectations to the party. And that's very important to understand in all sorts of arenas. I mean, particularly with regard to this newfound delight we take in taking offense. If I take offense, I am more culpable of the injury that I'm suffering than the person who has given the offense. because I have no volition with regard to their behavior, but I have absolute volition over my expectation. So, you know, the fact that I have chosen to take offense makes me more culpable to the injury than the person who misbehaved. It also means that as we go forward in our lives, I mean, it is important to attempt not to give offense. I mean, I'm not suggesting one has license to behave like a hooligan and a bully, but a far more important skill is the skill of learning how not to take offense. That is really what learning forgiveness is all about. And we know that the ability to forgive is a cardinal virtue for a Muslim. The ability to forgive is to overlook, is to make an assumption of the best of intention, and to not make somebody else's misbehavior your problem, is to choose not to take offense. This is a far more important skill to learn, choosing not to take offense, than it is to not to give offense. If all of us in the world that we're in exercise that muscle, the ability not to take offense, we would not only be much more peaceful people, but I dare say there'll be infinitely less conflict in the world. May Allah grant us nearness to Him. May Allah grant us annihilation in Him. May He grant us death before we die. Inna Allaha wa malaikatahu yusallu ala nabi ya ayyuha alladhina amanu sallu alayhi wa sallimu taslima. Allahumma salli ala sayyidina Muhammadin abdika wa rasulika nabiyyina wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa sallim taslima. Subhana rabbika rabbil izzati amma yasifun wa salamun ala al-mursalin. Alhamdulillah.